you're listening on our public feed, which includes a shortened version of this episode. To hear the extended version and get access to our bonus shows, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com.
This show is a part of the FM Podcast Network, the home of great music podcasts. Visit us at fmpods.com.
You are listening to the Dilettantes Podcast.
Hey everyone, I'm Jim Salvucci of the Dilettantes, and welcome to the latest installment of Million Dollar Bash. It's that Million Dollar Bash. Only 1 year after the triumphal release of Oh Mercy, Dylan came out with 1990's Under the Red Sky. The album is known for its all-star musicians, George Harrison, Slash, David Crosby, Bruce Hornsby, Al Kooper, David Lindley, and others, and was produced by Don Was. It is filled with the language and structure of children's songs and music, which is befitting an album dedicated to Gabby Goo Goo, likely Dylan's then-toddler daughter, Desiree Gabrielle Dennis Dylan. There are countless songs, fairy tales, and echoes of nursery rhymes, but the songs often sport an ominous feel that is hard to shake, which, if we are being fair, is not too different from the traditional children's folk literature. For instance, The Cats in the Well is based on an old nursery rhyme about, you guessed it, a cat in the well. The weirdest aspect of Dylan's take, though, is the driving blues melody that backs the lyrics. It's a rockin' number that belies the quaintness of its verses. Some songs, such as Born in Time, are stellar, while others are the targets of endless knee-jerk derision. No song falls more into that latter category than the album's opening track, Wiggle Wiggle. Personally, I've always seen Wiggle Wiggle as a harmless bit of fun, like Country Pie or Every Grain of Sand, but others have pegged it as a sign of the coming apocalypse. Perhaps if it weren't the very first song on the album, people would lighten up a bit, but there you have it. We also see Dylan return to satiric form in several songs, most notably the romping TV Talkin' song, which is both hopelessly dated and sweetly naive in this internet age. As a satire, the song is clever, though. It's a narrative about a man holding forth in Hyde Park, ranting about the evils of television. Most of the lyrics are simply a transcript of what he says, with the narrator serving as mere reporter. This structure allows Dylan some ironic distance from the message. At the end of the song, a riot breaks out, and Dylan concludes with this amusing irony. Later on that evening, I watched it on TV. One oddity, this is the rare Dylan album to include the lyrics in the liner notes. Under the Red Sky is a short album, 35 and a half minutes long, but in some ways, it is too long. Handy Dandy would make a fine finish to the album, but instead we get one more number, the uninspired The Cats in the Well. Most Dylan albums start and end strong. Under the Red Sky does the opposite, which may be one reason, along with its uncharacteristically slick production and slapdash performances, the album has never been well received. But here's the good news. Today we have almost a full house on the bash, and I want to introduce our guests and ask them to say hi as I call their names. So up first is Court Carney.
Hello, everyone.
Then we've got Rayleigh Hearn.
Hey there.
Erin Callahan.
Hey, everyone.
And Rockin' Rob Reginio.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me. Hello, everyone.
All right. So what do we want to say about Under the Red Sky?
Can I give you my hot take? I have my hot take.
Hot take, please.
I wish he had never written or released Wiggle Wiggle for this reason. It's the laziest attack on him that people have. The song is fine, but it's such a shorthand for like, oh my God, can you believe he wrote such garbage? And I think for that reason alone, I wish he had just cut it, because it just is the laziness of writers to use that as an attack is just tiresome. Otherwise, it's a fine track.
So why do you consider it lazy?
No, not the track itself. I think it becomes a lazy attack on Dylan, where all these writers say, can you believe he wrote something so stupid, or this is childish or whatever. And I don't think it's that bad a track. And I think that just becomes it just carries the weight of everyone's disappointment. And I think that Wiggle Wiggle becomes a shorthand for something that I think is unfair. Can you criticize the record? Absolutely. Can you criticize some of the lyrics in this period? Absolutely. But I don't think it's fair to be so dismissive of an entire record because of the opening track. My problem with that is that isn't there a question of Slash? Slash is hardly on there, right? I know, Aaron, you wanted to talk about Slash. You had an hour of Slash material.
Like the merging of two great loves. When all my friends were in love with Axel or Duff McKagan, I was all about Slash as a young 13-year-old. And so I do love that there's a wonderful CBS radio recording or interview with him where he talks about the session that is still one of his favorite sessions. And he goes in and Dylan tells him to record something and he does something acoustic. And then he lays down the guitar solo and he tells Was, when you finish it, send it over to me. And he gets the track and he's not on it. And he's shocked. And so he calls Was up and he says, what happened? He said, well, Dylan cut it. Bob cut it because it sounded too much like Guns N' Roses. And Slash took that as such a badge of honor because he said, I'm in a band that has a sound. And Bob recognized that sound. And he was so proud of that.
I read it online and he said it was one of the worst experiences of his life.
That's hilarious because I listened to the
he
CBS.
Said when Dylan said, it sounds so much like Guns N' Roses, Slash said, well, what the fuck did you want me to do?
That's hilarious. I was listening to this thing last night. And
he
it's
did
just
not. He came right out and said he said Dylan was indifferent. He had no interest in me or what I was going to review.
Yeah, I was listening to
No Love Lost.
Yeah, no, and I wonder where the dates are because when I was listening,
I'll find it and send it.
So yeah, I'll find it too because he was so. I was listening to it last night. It's an audio recording, and I was just he said it's still one of the best experiences of his life.
So funny.
Yeah. So we can't trust Slash like we can't trust Dylan, maybe.
The Dylan-tons audience checks in for the competing Slash stories.
Do it all.
Just like you go to Dylan albums for those screaming guitars. By the way, everyone, we're in luck. Nina Goss has made it, and you just heard from her.
I'm
so we
sorry.
Have a full house. No, this is great. Welcome. We're happy you're here. This was your idea, so we were really
sure
bummed
was.
You weren't
so
here.
Here I am, rolling in. Yes.
By the way, I heard the same story Nina did. That he hated that session. It was the worst recording session of his life. But apparently Bob liked his top hat because we saw that pop up a little bit later on.
Right. I'll find the local link and send it to you.
Okay, I'll find it too.
That's curious.
I probably still have it open because I was like, that's really interesting that he said one of the things I read, he said he wasn't quite sure what Bob was asking for him. So he played what he wanted to play. But then in that CBS radio interview, he was very positive about it.
Oh, isn't that funny?
When was it recorded? Do you know?
I don't. I said I'll find it and it may be revisionist on Slash's part.
All right. So we've already talked a little bit about Wiggle Wiggle.
Before we leave Wiggle Wiggle, though, it is interesting that one person who hasn't disavowed himself of the song, and I just went dark again, if you're watching a video, I don't know why.
We need to do a robot voice, Grayley, when you go dark.
Apparently. But yeah, Dylan has not disavowed the song. I just looked it up and he's played it live 110 times. Think of all the great songs he's played less than that. That's double the number of times he's played Song to Woody. So we can go down the line only a pawn in their game, let alone the ones he's never played, like Sad Eyed Lady of the Lowlands. So I agree with your point that it has become a shorthand for just taking shots at Bob. But I think most of the people who do it good natured. It's funny. It becomes a kind of tagline. I was listening to one of the Cincinnati bootlegs, 1992 at Music Hall, I'm pretty sure. And there was a pause waiting for the next song. And someone just perfectly timed before Dylan and the band kicked in the next song, Wiggle Wiggle. And it just cracked me up every time. You just heard Desolation Row and you want him to follow that up with Wiggle Wiggle. Okay.
By the way, I wasn't going to leave Wiggle Wiggle by any means. I think there's much more to say about Wiggle Wiggle. Why do you think, though, that it's not a lyrically brilliant or anything like that? It is a fun song, but why do you think it gets such derision? It's easy, yes, but there's other songs that are, too.
How thrilled people were after Old Mercy, what they were waiting for. And this is the next thing you get. You put the CD in, and what do you get? Wiggle, 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 like a big fat snake. My favorite line is like a ton of lead. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle like a ton of lead. I think that's what it is, the falling off feeling.
That's an interesting take. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. So you come off All Mercy and then boom, there's Wiggle Wiggle waiting for you.
And you're the big Stones fan, Nina, and it reminded me at times of Start Me Up, because some of the lines in there, wiggle till you come, wiggle till you raise the dead, that feels like the end of Start Me Up to me.
There you go.
What's interesting
great
about
lines,
what Court said about the, and what Nina and Aaron talking about Slash's view of the recording process, I found online an interview with Robin Ford, who was on the sessions, and Court's point about sloppiness of the writing, it struck me to read that Robin Ford basically describes the recording session, as we all know Dylan's recording sessions go. He's flying by the seat of his pants, saying, I want this sound. Let's throw the Vaughn brothers, Robin Ford, Al Cooper, Slash in a room, and I'll just... and then they start. But he says, and when something would start happening that Dylan liked, he would get very animated. You could tell he was excited. He'd pick up the harmonica and start blowing and start trying to sing his lyrics that he's reading off the pages. And then what's interesting is that the Ford says, and there were literally pages and pages, loose pages. They weren't bound or anything. There must have been 40 or 50 pages on the table, and he'd just start fishing through them and start singing them. So to a certain degree, he is playing this fast and loose style of composing in the studio. But on the other hand, he's got a lot of writing backing up this album. And so this is a concerted aesthetic choice on his part to play with nonsense verse, nursery rhymes, that sort of thing.
I want to be clear here, and I think that that's what's so interesting about the process, Rob. I think there's interesting about this record is that there's not much out there on it, right? Like, that's the fun part. It's still a little bit of a mystery. You have all these big name people, but then it's like, and Slash can't even be consistent in his stories. So I think that's interesting. I will thank Nina for bringing this up, because I cannot tell you the last time I sat down and listened to this record, and it's pretty good. I think the worst songs are just fine, but I think some of the best songs are really great. And there's some really interesting things on here. It's our one Bob accordion record, right? We have a Bob on accordion. We have so many weird little things to it. And I do think, going back to Grayling's point, I would love to read the story as to how Handy Dandy got played once, but like in 2008. What's the story there? Was that a special request? Like, how does that become played so long after the record? And then some of these, and like Cats of the Well, I know Jim used to be disparaging that. That becomes a live staple. That was the song.
Oh, starting every show with that.
Anyway, I like going back to it. It was interesting. Thank you, Nate.
Welcome.
Yeah, I enjoyed re-listening to the album as well. Yeah, I'm not a big Cats in the Well fan, because I think the lyrics are trite, and the blues, there's a lot of blues on this album that could be a lot better, right? 10,000 Men. It's almost like he's phoning in the singing. I think Cats in the Well is a little too fast. If it was slowed down, it might be a little more interesting. Lean into the blues a little bit more. And that's why I'm down on it. Whereas I think Handy Dandy is a dandy tune.
Does every boomer musician write a TV song during the 80s? I think there's, or the 90s. It seems like there's so many like 57 channels.
Channels and nothing's going on.
The Bruce Springsteen. Yeah.
Dire Straits' whole video oeuvre is about cartoon TVs.
It occurred to me in listening to TV, the TV song, which I'm sure I had not listened to in over 30 years. I probably hadn't listened to it since 1990. And I don't particularly like it as a song, but it suddenly hit me, wow, there are at least three Dylan songs that spring to mind that end with the singer in front of the television. You've got this one, you've got Black Diamond Bay, and Tweeter and the Monkey Man. All right. So I don't know what to make of that, but there it is. Dylan likes ending songs in front of the television.
I think maybe Dylan just likes television, despite the TV talking song and its lyrics. Any other highlights in the album?
My revelation, and I use that word on purpose, and I can't tell you how many times I've listened to it since I've relearned this record. Is God Knows. What a great fucking track. And I have just been obsessed with it since I don't know how many times I've listened to it before now, but I am just, there's a conventional wisdom that the Oh Mercy session is better. I don't think that's true. I think the Oh Mercy version sounds like a theme song from a 90s sitcom. But the version that's on the record is really great. And it's weird. We don't hear those chords with Dylan very often. It's a mix of maybe some sort of old rhythm and blues spiritual sort of chord structure, doo-wop structure, but then it sounds kind of like something Wilco would have done 10 years after this. It's cool. It's strange. Kenny's drumming is weird and sort of like falling off a cliff, and the whole song is really great. But then, and this is what was astounding to me, was listening to, I think it's the 94 Roseland Ballroom version. If anybody hasn't listened to that recently, that version of God Knows in 94 is just killer. It's killer. The band is so hot. He's playing lead guitar, I think, on that. I think Dylan's playing lead during that period. It's just a great song. It's a throwback in some ways. It's a throwaway in some ways, but I don't think so. I was really impressed with, like, where did this song come from? It's buried in the back half of the record, but he plays it a lot. It's like what Grayley was saying. Some of these songs just get played over and over and over again. And he must have dug it. Like, it has a nice sort of, like, just him by himself and the band crashes in. But the drumming on that live version of 94 is amazing. Anyway, that was my big moment of, like, wow, how many other songs out there are going to be the soundtrack of my life in 2024 other than this 1990 backside of Under a Red Sky record? Anyway, that's my positivity for the day.
I love the Oh Mercy version. I find the vocals are much more committed, less tentative, but.
Rob, we don't have to agree on everything.
Yeah.
You know, the music, like the music of it?
We can off the.
No, what's funny is that you've got both Vaughn Brothers playing on God Knows on the album, I think. Stevie Ray and Jimmy Vaughn.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say, it sounds like heresy, but there are some rather cheesy blues riffs they just throw in there. And I like the stripped down version of the Oh Mercy arrangement where it's just these rhythm guitars pushing the song forward.
Are you suggesting we need more Texas Erasure? This is blasphemy. No, I care about that. I just think it's a cool vibe. And on the release version has a cool vibe you don't hear very often. It's got a chord thing that he doesn't play that often.
Yeah.
And then it has like a really cool collapsing piece to it. But then the 94 version, which I just have gone back to a million times, is just so hot. Like, it's a really, that band during that period is just really great. It was a revelation to me about that song. And the song goes back. There's lyrically, there's some cool things in it. Like the scissors to a string line is cool. And there's all sorts of really, there's like a Mary, Don't You Weep, obviously pointillism going on there. But I don't know. I was just like, he's got so many cool songs that you never hear that I don't ever hear. I don't listen to that often. I was like, this is as good as this. I hear what you're saying, and I hear what everyone's going to say, and it's going to be dismissed out of hand. But anyway, for the 1st of June, 2024, the 1st of June, 2024, this is a song that's just hitting it.
When I first heard the song, what I loved about it is the way he plays with the contronym of the phrase God Knows, because the idiom means nobody knows. God knows. And then, of course, God knows is omniscient. So it's I love the way he plays with that. And I like those cheesy blues stuff. But I think that there's a super weak and probably fatuous case that you could make. God Knows and Unbelievable and TV Talk and Song, he's playing in this very weak and ranty way. This is what I think Bob Dylan is and ranting about postmodern relativistic meaning and that in the world, that he's tuning into these threads and he's taking this on. And because I do, and political world is another. And so when you take these songs together, these kind of weak, prophety, P-R-O-P-H-E-T type songs, and they really are weak, but I think that there's a thread of Bob Dylan taking on postmodern epistemology in these songs. But believe me, I'm sure all your 250,000 listeners are turning off, turning this off right now when they're listening to me witter on about this. But that is what I loved about God Knows, that I think it has the potential for real ingenuity in the way he's using that phrase.
Well, thanks, Nina, for blowing my surprise. I was going to, at the end of this, announce that I'd gotten to 250,000 listeners.
Yeah. And steering your podcast right into a ditch.
No, so I actually agree. I thoroughly, and I would throw Everything Is Broken in the same mix, right?
If that's a subgenre,
right?
Good job. Good job.
No, I actually have exactly the same feelings, because I think those songs are all of a piece. And they rub me the wrong way, but they're also incredibly fascinating.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for here in the public feed. If you'd like to hear the rest of this episode and get access to extended and bonus episodes from this and all of the other shows on the network, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com.
Thank you for listening to the Dilettantes Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to FM Pods to hear the complete podcast.